My name is Tyler, and
my name is Greg.
And welcome to the Horror Podcast.
This live, so bear with us.
Yeah. We are finally coming back from the pandemic, and we are just thrilled to have a live audience here with us, hanging out. So we just spent the last hour and a half enjoying every moment of 976 Evil.
Every single moment.
So in a normal episode, what Oren and I would do is we'd go through what we're watching, what we're reading, what we're excited about. We have a couple of things real quickly to mention there before we move on with today's essential question, which would be, why the hell are we still talking about horoscopes? And so
and were we ever.
Right. Oren, what are you excited about? What have you...
So I haven't watched anything terribly exciting lately because I've been busy, of course, but I did read a comic called The Crossroads at Midnight by Abby Howard,
okay,
which was amazing. It's like a five-part anthology horror comic in like the, you know, spooky old TV show vein, and it's great.
Awesome.
It's fantastic.
Very good. Where can they, where can everyone find a copy of that?
The publisher was something like Iron Circle Press or something like that, but, I mean, it's on Amazon or at the library, and it's where I got the copy I read is actually from the library.
Sweet.
So.
Very good. We should also mention, I think now is a great transition, Andrew, our host here at the Stray Cat Theater, is also a librarian, so,
nice.
Yay to the librarians, man. They have been here through us through the last couple of years, giving us some exposure to stuff that might be difficult to track down.
Yeah.
I would add, I checked out Fresh, which is the new horror movie, one of the new horror movies out currently on Hulu. It is a weird, weird cannibal-ish film. But yeah, totally, I think, enjoyable. It's one of those that may have problematic overtones to it. But if you are a fan of, like, You on Netflix, which is another strange series, I think Fresh is kind of in the same vein. So, yeah, those would be our two recs. Let's chat for a moment.
From the mind of Robert Englund, alias Freddy Krueger, comes his first directorial movie.
What's up, Chuck?
A movie reliving a nightmare.
Let him go!
The powers of darkness have returned. Returned to capture their souls.
Don't worry about others. You'll damage your pride. They'll soon regret it.
The souls of the innocent.
Someday soon, you're gonna be down here and I'm gonna spit on you.
Some say it's a warning from God.
A warning about what?
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Take it. You're too late, Palmer.
Before we get into the nitty-gritty of horoscopes and 976 Evil, Oren usually picks our subject matter because he is by far the smarter of the two and way more engaged with, I think, the kind of nitty-gritty of horror stuff. So, Oren, why 976 Evil?
So I actually picked this one initially before we'd even, like, set to do this. I picked it just for a random episode of the show because I'd actually never seen it at the time that I picked it. I'd seen the sequel, but never this one. And so I was like, well, I want to watch that. This will give me an excuse, basically. And, you know, so I picked it, and it turned out once I'd picked it, like, I watched it, and it was like, oh, no, this will be good for, like, a live show, good for a group thing. It'll be fun. So that's kind of why we did it tonight as opposed to just on the show, like, normal.
Yeah. So... one of the things that we really hope to accomplish with our partnership here at Stray Cat, we are a huge fan of an organization called AGFA. AGFA is the American Genre Film Archive. And essentially, the long and the short of it is, they preserve genre film, like what we have seen here, that we might not otherwise get exposed to. There is a fantastic book that came out. I think it's called Strange and Thrilled, an exploration of AGFA, essentially. And most of the films that AGFA and the folks that have really championed this were found in a film depot just outside of Kansas City. Essentially, they found like 1,000 different reels of films, of which like only a handful of people had seen. And they were like, oh my God, how do we spread the news about this stuff? And
spread the good word.
Yeah, and we got Weird Wednesdays, which is a thing that the Alamo Draft House started up, and obviously a number of other film folks have jumped on board. But if you want a really great story about how we almost lost a ton of this film and some really heroic people have saved it, you need to check out the story of what the Alamo Draft House did and the folks that hosted it, because 976 Evil was a really difficult thing to get a hold of for a while, and there are a ton of other films that are just like it. So before we get into the nitty-gritty and we start talking about the stars, I want to give away a bunch of stuff today. So if you have anything to contribute to the dialogue you want to say about the movie or whatever, the chief goal here is to increase discourse around movies that we really enjoy to watch. So raise your hand, and I want to hear what you have to say. You are going to have stuff to contribute that will be probably way better than either Oren or I have. It's certainly better than me. So, first question, and you'll have your dibs of the prizes since it's the first one. Raise your hand and tell me the name of the diner that we saw them eat at all the time. Ooh, I saw your hand.
Dante's?
It is Dante's. Welcome. All right, all right. So, your choices are Final Destination 3. The 2-disc Thrill Ride Edition.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Tales from the Dark Side, the movie.
Ooh.
Ooh. Species, which is also, like, it's got a director's commentary on it and all kinds of stuff. And then a brand new movie that just came out, RLJE sent it to me, Silent Night. So it's okay. It's fine.
He's really selling that one.
So, the third one was Species.
I'll take that one.
Yeah, you will. Welcome, welcome. Congratulations. Yeah. Andrew, let's talk about the cast for a moment, if you'll scroll through. Okay. First off, who names their kid Hoax, man?
Right?
What's going on with that?
It was very weird. Like, yeah. And again, as near as I can tell, because we were talking about this before the movie, like, is that actually his name or, like, a nickname? But like his mom calls him by like his full name, which is like Hoax Arthur Wilmoth or whatever. And so like, yes, apparently that's his given first name. I feel like if your religious mom names you Hoax, that's a sick fucking burn on you.
Yeah. I feel like there's a whole prequel to this movie that we are not getting, where maybe this kid called 976 Evil before and he was like, I'm being possessed by the devil. And she's like, it's a hoax, right? I want to see that movie. But, there's a lot to unpack there. You might notice Spike had a real name too. It was like Lawrence or something like that. Yeah. One more, if you don't mind, Andrew. Marty, who's played by Jim Metzler, as you might notice. Angela, who I truly believe deserved better, right? At the end of the day, she puts in a lot of good work. I think she is...
That was Susie, man. Angela was the principal. Right?
Hey, well, Angela deserves some credit, too.
Yeah, she was... Yeah. But yeah. She survived, at least.
That's true. Well, let's talk about Susie for a moment, because I don't think Susie made our credits here. I think she was nice, right?
Susie deserved better than either of them. They were jerks.
So we get a little bit of, like, a love triangle that happens. And as I was preparing, like, research and everything, I kept coming back to a passage out of a book that I read in college by Monique Wittig called The Straight Mind. And essentially her argument is in movies, especially movies from the 70s and the 80s and even earlier, it was really difficult to tell gay stories, to tell queer stories, right? And as a result, a lot of our male love triangles are really not love triangles at all. They're really love stories between the two males.
Right.
And
I mean, you even see that in the TV series version of Hannibal, right? Where what's her name? The doctor becomes a proxy for each of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, you know, that came out just a few years ago. So.
Yeah. Also, if you haven't seen it, you got to check it out.
It's great stuff.
Rumor is they just accrued the rights to Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
So there is some talk there's going to be a new season, which would be an awesome. So, but yeah, like the show that Oren was mentioning and this movie in particular, I think the real question that I would like to pose to you all, to Oren, is there a queer reading of 976 Evil? Because I would posit maybe.
I mean, I absolutely think there is, which will it'll come back up when we pick the movies we pick at the end to compare it with, because one of them I picked entirely because of that, actually. yeah, I mean, I think there is. And I think, more to the point, whether it's romantic love or not, the sort of core conflict, the core relationship of the movie is between Spike and Hoax. The everyone else is either gets in the way or affects that relationship in some way. But I mean, they're obviously they're the ones who have all the moments together. They have all the big scenes together. They have the end, you know, the end confrontation. Spike is the one who has to kill Hoax, but first shows how much they love each other with the whole like we're gonna go on a trip across the country mm-hmm. thing coming back in. So I think it's interesting. One of the things I really like about this movie is the fact that when they show up at the very end at Hoax's house, it's all frozen, which is such a weird such a weird design choice in a movie filled with weird production design choices. You know, like they obviously did it partly for the you know hell froze over gag. But also, you know, they have a bunch of references to Dante, Virgil, so on and so forth. And, you know, in Dante's Inferno, right, the ninth circle of hell is cold, it's frozen. And I feel like that is there partly because, you know, Hoax betrayed Spike, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, Hoax, you know, tried to steal his girl. That didn't work. He idolized him and then turned on him.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah,
you know.
and arguably, Spike doesn't do anything wrong. Like in the grand scheme of evaluating that protagonist, right? We gotta have a tragic flaw or whatever. Like theoretically, maybe it's a vague gambling addiction.
I mean, he's not the most selfless guy. He's kind of a jerk, but he's not like not a jerk compared to anyone else in Hoax's life. I mean,
yeah. Right, because the only other person that we meet that is stable, right, that can help Hoax would be his mom, right? And
she's not remotely.
No.
I mean, yeah, the only other stable character besides ostensibly our principal and cop, which we'd never really get to know,
right,
is Susie, who dies early on. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and completely undeserved of that. But yeah, like, Hoax's mom, like... Obviously, a reliance on, constructed religion to, influence how she conducts herself. But, like, her hair can't stay the same. So there's no way that she can be, the stable part of her life. So it is Spike through a pneumatic tube. Also, a weird, weird choice, right?
Yeah. A very strange decision to include Chekhov's pneumatic tube.
Yeah. I just thought it was a really cool. I mean, when Oren was like, "Hey, we're gonna do this movie," I was like, "Oh, okay, that's cool." You know, like this is, I'm 41 years old. So this is right from my prime. You know, so, but yeah, the first time the fish comes through the tube, I'm like, I don't know what. I'm already lost. I'm already confused. Yeah, But I think ties into that, like, the first time that they really have a moment is just simply Hoke saying hi, which I think is...
And sort of ogling him weirdly.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, because, like, you know, you later get the scene where Hoke is, like, creeping on them with the telescope, which, again, using a telescope to look across the yard, you would just see, like, a blur. I mean, that thing's for looking at space, dude.
Yeah.
You don't need a telescope for that. Get binoculars.
Also, you're going to be a weirdo. Do right. it right, you know? Yeah.
But also, like, you know, even before that, he's watching Spike, right? Like, he wants to, if nothing else, be Spike. Even if he doesn't, again, even if there's nothing romantic there, even if there's nothing, you know, nothing homoerotic there, he wants to be Spike. He's idolizing him. He's looking at him. He's longing for him in some way before he even sees the girl, like... From the very first time we see them.
Yeah. Well, and so this movie's directed by Robert Englund, right? You know, the Freddy Krueger. But I think there are some really interesting choices. There is a lingering shot of Hoke looking at Spike in the school, right? That really reminded me, and I think we've talked this on a previous podcast, of A Rebel Without a Cause. Obviously, you know, with the kind of code that we used to have in Hollywood, it's impossible to really tell a gay story, especially back then. So we get these beautiful shots between James Dean and Heathcliff, right? And it's all shown through the gaze of the camera. And we get something very similar here. And that was my first case. I was like, I think there might be something going on a little bit more than just I love my cousin, which puts a unnecessarily weird strain on this particular take. But, yeah, man, I think at the very end there's this tenderness, right? It's like, we'll go to New Orleans and we'll go, to, you know, I'm like, that shit's romantic, you know? Like, I like to take trips, but there's something going on. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll go to the next one. Susie. There's Susie.
There's Susie.
Yeah. Who offers up, I think, the only really pretty well-developed, strong, feminine character in this movie. I don't know if you all are remotely familiar with the Bechdel test, but this movie does not pass it. But I think the closest we get is Susie, who is a real character, right? I think.
Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, the principal, you know, bless her, she barely does anything. You know, the mom is clearly a cartoon character.
Right.
Like, I mean, you know, Sandy Dennis is great, but, yeah, the mom character is a cartoon. She's not
real.
She's not a real person.
Yeah.
Susie's the closest we get.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know that ultimately she becomes... a sexualized character, right? Like, that's the crux of the film there. But she offers up this moment of tenderness, this moment, I'm going to hang out with this kind of loser, and I'm going to show him a good time, and I'm going to give him money, and I'm going to feed him. And there is this really strong, almost maternal feeling that I think makes how she dies even worse. Like, her treatment in this is not great.
Yeah.
So
it's rough.
So my favorite character in this film is Marcus, okay? Played by the unbelievable J.J. Cohen. So if you'll go to the next slide for me, Andrew. All right. So that's J.J. Cohen on the bottom right. Next giveaway here. Whose gang is he a part of? Anybody know? In this movie, J.J. Cohen plays a member. Actually, he's billed as Skinhead in three different films. Who's
that's a legacy to leave behind.
Whose gang is he a part of? Anybody have a guess? Who said it? Yes, Biff Tanner is correct. Yeah, well done. Yay. So, we know J.J. Cohen. Would you prefer Silent Night, Final Destination, or Tales from the Dark? All right, there you go. So, this is... J.J. Cohen, who essentially paid his children's way through college, playing different goons in the 1980s and early 90s. And I think, at least about Marcus, he's not a total dick, right?
I mean,
ooh, somebody was like, oh, maybe he is.
I mean, do we ever see him do anything that isn't be a dick?
Okay, talk to me about it.
I don't have anything to talk about it. I'm legitimately asking a question. Like, do we ever see him do anything?
Maybe.
Besides kind of be a jerk to people over poker?
Yeah.
I mean, and sort of lord over his weird little fiefdom in the bathroom.
Right. Well, in the bathroom and also in the all-night movie theater that... Yeah.
Which I wish my town had.
Yeah, right? Like, Greg's got an in with some movie theater people, as we do here. Maybe we can, closer to Halloween, we can talk them into a 24-hour horror movie marathon. Yeah.
We can all just sit and play poker in the projection booth.
Yeah, I'll get the nudie playing cards and we'll call it great. Yeah. But I think maybe why I feel like he's less of a dick, he's less of a caricature of that, you know? Like, he tells him to lay off of Hoax, kind of. He tells him in the bathroom, obviously, they're his goons. But, you know, maybe his evilness is quieter.
I mean, I feel like none of them are, like, they're all just petty bullies, right? They're none of them actually, like... I don't know, like, drug dealers in an 80s, you know, Miami Vice movie or something, right? Like, none of them are, like, going to kill people.
True.
You know, they're all just high school bullies. They're kids, fundamentally.
Yeah.
Being, you know, they're drinking and smoking and playing cards and doing all the shit that seems cool and tough when you're, you know, a teenager.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, they're all assholes. Yeah, but none of them are evil.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, we don't see them do anything evil.
Yeah, like, I think in the scenes in the bathroom and that, like, it's the henchmen that ultimately I think are way worse than Marcus, although ostensibly he is in control of them, so, you know, like, I get that everything probably starts with him, maybe.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, but yeah, fundamentally they're all just bullies. They seem young. A lot of times, you know, people playing high schoolers in movies... they seem like they're like 30, right? And they're playing high schoolers. But these guys, I don't know how old they were, but, you know, they seem young. Like, when they get confronted by things, when they get scared, they seem like scared kids, not like scared adults.
Yeah.
And that makes it, you know, easier to read them as, to have more pity for them.
Yeah.
When ultimately they get murdered a bunch.
Yeah, a bunch, a whole lot. But, yeah, I think... That's the thing about the first act. If you'll go to the next slide for me. Yeah, so I think in the first chapter, right, Hoax is ultimately exposed. But that's where we meet everybody, right? And I think one of the hallmarks, one of the great things about this film is there's nobody even in the beginning. Even Marcus, who's kind of a dick, whatever, they're all kind of likable. They're all people that we would hang out with for the most part. You know, like we see them... in a way that doesn't make them unbearable. And I think sometimes in modern horror especially, it's like we need to kick the dog, right? We need this moment where we know they're all assholes.
With the possible exception of Sandy Dennis's character. I mean,
that's
true. His mom is pretty horrible.
She is, yeah. Which is, I think, one of the weird tensions of this movie. It is definitely a product of, like, the satanic panic of the 1980s and early 90s. Like... Yeah, like upside down crosses, and I think there are some black candles that we see. You know,
I feel like she's partly like a parody of, you know, Carrie's mom from Carrie.
Oh yeah,
you know, like that very sort of homebrewed religion that is very personal and very much a shield that they use against the world that they feel has wronged them, and they impose this on their kid. Like that is, I mean, that's, and she feels like she is just that. Cranked up, made more ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, it felt like an intentional nod to Carrie's mom, even to me.
Yeah, I think that's a good reading. My question to everyone here, because I got no answer: is the fish shit real, or are we to assume that like a whole bunch of fish fell from the sky, or do we think that there is like that? I caught in this screening that Spike kind of smiles in like. There's a little head nod, and I'm like, I don't know. Did Spike do that, or do you think it's real?
I mean, so I assumed, the way I read it, the movie, I was expecting, the first time I watched it, the movie to go back and actually give this explanation and never did. You get, early on, you hear, like, on the TV or radio, them talking about a big storm coming through, which is set up as, you know, for the dark and stormy night on the phone, but I mean, big storms are how fish fall from the sky. Like, you know, tornadoes and things pick them up, drop them miles away. And so I assumed that the big storm was the sort of the teaser, the foreshadowing of the fish coming down, and then her seeing it as this miracle. Although, again, I'm not sure why that was any of that was needed for the plot, but it was great.
Yeah, right? Like, in piecing through the editing of this film, there's some interesting choices, but yeah, the entire 10-minute bass debacle is probably unnecessary.
But right? We did get to hear her say that they were God's fishes a bunch of times, which was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. I want to clip that line and put it at the beginning of every podcast. Yeah. So we get exposure, right, early on. Part of the reason why this film would not work currently, I was talking to my class the other day, and I was like, well, you know, we got to go to a payphone and do that. I was talking about when I was at a dance, right, and they looked at me like I had no clue what was going on, and I had to describe what a goddamn payphone was to these high school kids, right? And they all took out their cell phones and proceeded to laugh at me. So it was a traditional Tuesday in room 325, but... there's no, like, this film relies so heavily on the kind of ubiquity of payphones. I don't know if it would translate to.
I mean, it would have to be a period piece now. I mean, you couldn't. I mean, you can even look at movies like One Missed Call and stuff and see how different they are once even cell phones are introduced in any form. But, like, one of the things that's fascinating about this movie and even its sequel to some extent, and there's a couple of others like Murder by Phone or Dial Help from a similar point in time, is that they are these movies that are this snapshot of a moment that is the only moment like that, where phones are ubiquitous, where everyone has one, where, like, 900 numbers and these kind of things are accepted norms of society, but at the same time, they're right before the internet happened and phones just were destroyed. Like, yeah. Phones no longer existed in that form anymore, like, just within a few short years of this, you know?
I think one of the absolute hallmarks of this movie is that it is a snapshot out of time for when all of us, looks like most of us, at least in this room, grew up around those 1-800-1900 number commercials that Andrew put together, especially as a pre-show, which I think is great. And describing what those are... to, like, my teenage son is damn near impossible.
I mean, when I think about them, they sound bizarre to me now.
Yeah. So, and we'll put this in the show notes. So when this episode comes out later, there is a great article from Legit NG, which, whatever. I don't know if it's legit or not, but they have...
It says it right in the name.
Right. Like, that's how we can get our viewership up. We should call ourselves Legit Horror Podcast, and we'll fill these seats next time. But they're full of currently working 1-800-1900 numbers that are weird as shit, right? So, number one, you'd call Santa. That seems normal. Yeah. Seems useful even, right, with our children, you know? But then we have, this is 605-475-6964, paid line. The tagline is... It could always suck more. So you just call and hear people tell you about their bullshit that happened during the day. And I'm like, okay, maybe.
I mean, I'm really hoping, so I don't know how many people actually saw all of Andrew's pre-show thing, but one of them you just called and listened to people cry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm really hoping that one's on this list and still exists.
Yeah. who doesn't want to sit and listen
right?
to people cry?
I just want to call people and have them cry. Like, I feel like if you find that on your kid's phone bill, it's more disturbing by far than if you find, like, a sex line on there. Like, yeah, no, I just really wanted to listen to people cry. There's definitely something wrong. You should get your kids some help.
Right. Yeah. I don't know about you, but that soothes me at the end of the night. Yeah.
No, maybe.
So we have
at least talk to them about it.
The very useful... this is 212-479-7990. That is the number that you can give out if you would like somebody else to reject the person you are hitting on. So, or that is hitting on you. So they hit on you at a club. You're like, oh, yeah, here's my number. And they call it. And it's just some dude saying, like, yeah, they're not really into you. So, which I think would be a ton of fun. But there's another line that will notify you if you have bad breath. So if somebody has terrible breath, you give them that number. They let you know. the quit complaining line, which will give you perspective on other people complaining about dumb shit. And finally, there is something called the epic speech line, which actually is a still functioning 1-800 number for a game called God of War, where you'll just get the end credit scene, which I, again, very weird, very strange. But that's just the functioning stuff now. If you go back to the 80s, some wild, wild stuff. So we find 976 Evil. We call it. We get our horoscope. Hoax commits, and ultimately, Hoax turns bad. Feel Andrew, take us to the next one. Yeah. So we kind of covered the 1-900 numbers. They became really popular in the 1980s, and we'll have a couple of links that will explore this. Mostly because there was a huge, robust movement for businesses to figure out different ways to make money. And as a result, companies that were not into phone sex, were not into horoscopes, suddenly got into all of that. So the big business, still to this day, we looked at buying one for this particular, we could buy like HorrorPod Glass or, you know, whatever the number equivalent is, $49 a month, you can run your own phone sex thing now. So,
sweet.
You know, nobody wants to listen to me heavy breathe into the phone, but if that's
but
your
cry
jam,
maybe. I mean, that's a possibility.
I mean, that's every night in the hotel household anyway, so. But, and next one, Andrew. Oh, no, I think Andrew's probably hanging out with us. So, I think he's checking on somebody at the door.
That makes sense.
What ultimately do we think does the horoscope role play into this film? And I will tell you, the kids these days. I love high school children, so you'll never catch me saying that in a way that isn't satirical, because I think our kids these days are really handling shit with a ton of grace that adults are doing a very poor job of. But kids these days are totally into horoscopes. Somebody told me, like, they wanted to know my birthday, and they were like, oh, you're a, you know, like, you're a falling, you know. Yeah, right. And I was like, I don't know what any of that means. And they proceeded to tell me for, like, 20 minutes, right?
Right.
But, like, what? Why our obsession, you know, obviously in the 80s with all of the 1-800 and 1-900, we had tons of horoscopes, and now we're making our venture back to that. Why are we obsessed, and why are our kids obsessed with it?
I mean, I don't know the answer to the first half of that. I mean, I think, and we've talked about this on some other shows, I think part of it is that the world is fucked right now. And when the world is fucked, people tend to be more drawn toward what we would call mysticism in any form, be it you know, spiritualism, be it you know, horoscopes, be it chaos magic, any of that stuff. You know, we socially, there are bigger movements of that every time the social fabric seems like it is under threat in some direct way, where like the systems are failing us, right? Like, the people that are supposed to be protecting us, the things that are supposed to be taking care of us, are breaking down, they're failing us, they're not doing their job. And so we look to things that give us a sense of control, right? That give us a sense of understanding the universe when what we thought we understood doesn't prove to be true. And, you know, that takes a million different forms, but one of those forms is horoscopes. Now, is that the only reason? No, I'm sure not. But I think that it partially accounts for its, like, resurgence in popularity, especially on, like, TikTok and places like that, where people can build a community around that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's well put. And you're 100% right. Like, as a result of spending way too much time with high school kids, I still think, like, dick and fart jokes are really funny. And I'm really active on TikTok, and there is a whole subculture there. Like, yeah. I will tell you, if you're a Leo, I will tell you your horoscope today. Mm-hmm. Also, I listen to a few of them, and they're you know, kind of fun.
Yeah.
But I think it does hit upon a really important thing that our kids are struggling with, which is when we live in a world that struggles to define what fact and fiction is. And honestly, with the resurgence of, you know, what we call, what some people might call fake news, what some people will call real news, what, you know, the idea that there is a whole bunch of shit that people believe that is just not scientifically true or whatever.
Right.
Right. Our kids are adapting to that and are using their own magical thinking as a way to make sense of that. And adults are doing the same thing. Yeah. So,
I mean, and, you know, and to some extent, like, that's what Hoax does in the movie, right? I mean, he's got nothing to cling to. His mom's abusive. His school's abusive and also in a strange dystopian demilitarized zone.
Right.
You know, there's nothing for him in his world. Except this fantasy about Spike and then this phone line, which tells him what he wants to hear, right? I mean, it tells him that he can be cool. Taken seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
He can be, you know, he can get the things he wants, which no one's, you know, ever told him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, so he's looking for community, essentially, and he finds it in this phone line that accepts him, ostensibly.
Yeah. And Robert Picardo, who is playing the devil, I guess. Maybe, right?
And,
yeah.
Like, has a bad cold all the time, like the devil does. It was amazing. Like,
yeah.
Robert Picardo's great in this.
Weird choice, yeah. All right, so next giveaway. Robert Picardo stars as a doctor, in quotation marks, on what famous science fiction show? Oh, I'm definitely letting my nerd show. And oh, that's so sad. Yes.
Doctor Who.
Close, but no. His last name sounds like a famous captain on one of those shows. I'm trying.
Not quite the same show, but very close.
Yeah, right.
A different version of the same show.
It Boldly Goes. Yes, yeah.
Voyager? Is it Voyager?
Yeah, it's Voyager. Yeah.
I actually don't remember which one it is that he's in, but...
Tales from the Dark Side or Final Destination?
Oh, Final Destination.
Yes. It's the good one with the roller coaster.
They're all good ones. What are you talking
that
about?
That one may be the one where you get to pick your kill, too. So,
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so, like, it gives you two options for the people to die. I mean, come on. It's like a choose-your-own-adventure.
Who doesn't want to choose how people die?
Say what?
Wait.
It says choose their fate.
Oh, yeah. Sweet. All right. Bonus. All right. Andrew? Okay. The question that I had also in the context of this movie... one of the things that we talk about all the time at school that drives me nuts, also, there are older teachers and younger teachers to a certain degree that are like, kids in these cell phones. And I wondered if this movie maybe makes some connections to like how we have always feared our children's access to technology. What do you think? Maybe? Yes?
I mean, maybe a little bit. I feel like his mom is such a cartoon of a person that it's hard to draw much of a line between anything she does and like... a broader social thing. But I mean, you know, one of the things that's weird about humans, but specifically about like, about, you know, looking back at the history of movies and going through, you know, the 80s and the 70s and so on, is that, you know, we kind of think about everything that happened while we were alive, like since we've been born, everything that was the way it was before that had always been that way. But it's not true, right? Like, phones, it's not like phones were a new invention in the 1980s, but their ubiquity was still relatively fresh. I mean, 911 didn't get invented until, like, 67 or something like that, 70? I don't even remember. But, I mean, it was like, it had been around for, like, a decade, right, when the 80s started. Like, it was not, you know, these were not, the ubiquity of phones that we took for granted as kids that are now gone because we have cell phones now that are in our pockets instead was relatively new. Like, you'd go back 30 years, houses didn't all have them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's definitely weird microcosms when you, like, dig backward through, you know, film history of any kind and find, like, these artifacts from these bygone ages, be they 1988 or whenever, and see how, you know, different tiny things were that we took for granted then or that we take for granted now, But yeah, that's all I got. But I did love the phone store.
I want
the novelty phone store. I want that fish phone.
Did anybody have a Garfield phone? I had a Garfield phone, and it was my favorite goddamn thing in the world. And then eventually I went to college, and my parents sold it in a garage sale, and it still bothered me. But, you know, hey.
If you still had it, it would be probably worth something.
I know,
yeah,
right?
How dare they?
Instead, they kept, like, a trophy from, like, 7th grade basketball. I was like, what are we doing?
Did they stuff a bunch of money in it, like the weird fish trophy in this movie?
No. And it also didn't ostensibly kill me. So, I mean, hey. Trade-off, I guess. One more. All right, so the last segment that we do on every episode is something called Four Corners, where each of us tries to identify a couple of other movies. If you really liked this film, some other stuff that you should really engage with. And I think Oren's got a lot to say, particularly about the second film.
I picked Evil Speak, which is another movie about a bullied nerd getting revenge through satanic technology, good stuff. And then A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, and again, specifically because Part 2 is the one that's incredibly gay. I felt like the relationships there, like both between, you know, the main character and the sort of other character that is kind of cooler than him and is kind of a bully to him in some ways and so on, you know, reflected this, but also that kind of coded, you know, male relationships have to be filtered through all these weird things. They can't just be, and again, even if the one in this movie is not sexual or romantic, they still have to filter it through. They can't just say these two love each other even as, like, cousins, you know, they can't even just go and say that. They have to filter it through all these weird ways to show us that. And I feel like that, you know, I feel like we get a lot of that in A Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
Yeah.
As well.
Well, and there is a fantastic documentary that came out a couple of years ago. I think it is now on Shudder and a number of other streaming services that explores how Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, like, became kind of accidentally this big queer anthem, but also in the like ruined the life of the main character, because the director, either consciously or subconsciously, and that's a big debate in the documentary, added this huge queer subtext to the film, which is, you know, when we were talking throughout this week, I think one of the things that I'm coming to realize as a pseudo film critic, as somebody that likes to talk about film, it's that if directors don't intentionally put subtext into their movies, that shit happens by accident, and you end up getting, you know, a queer Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, or, you know, a queer 976 Evil, which I think is part of what happened here. I picked Witchboard, which is another movie that came out about a year before this one. It's got a lot of the same bonkers, like, special effects and just weird, like, a couple of really strange filters, and also captures that kind of cringy mid-80s zeitgeist, if you will. And I also picked It Is Not a Great Movie, okay? I'm going to be very honest. It is weird and has some stylistically strange choices, but it's got John Cusack in it, and it's called Cell from 2016, which is real loosely based off of the Stephen King novel of the same name. Cell's got some big capital weird moments to it, and is worth a watch as long as you go into it with the assumption that it is not a good film. It is something to be enjoyed, maybe not to be held up as a paragon of great, great film.
But all the films we talk about here are paragons of great film. I don't know what you're talking about.
Always. Well, I wanted to build in a little bit of time to get feedback from anybody in the audience that may have something to contribute to the conversation. Please give me ideas. I have taken ideas from this, used them in my classroom. I couldn't show 976 Evil, but what I could show is, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes of it to try to drive home a point in English class or speech class or whatever it may be. Are we missing? Yes.
I thought there was several really good shots, but I think my favorite shot is the bird's eye view above the stall. As he gets murdered, it really smoothly moves until you get to the stall where the hand has been thrown. down.
Yeah.
So you know that's where the hand went, and then you, for some reason there's blood coming out of that bowl. But that was a beautiful shot. And I thought that cutting away from that, you know, lets them not have to, you know, show that's the stabbing and everything, which is convenient, but they covered it up with a beautiful shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and any time that I see blood and water like that, I think of the really famous scene from The Shining where we get, you know, not just a toilet full of blood, but, you know, like a whole torrent full of it. Yeah. So, you know, maybe a slight reference to that. But, yeah, it is. It is.
And, I mean, and anything you describe from this movie is going to, at some point, include the words, for some reason. So, you know, it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. What else? Yes.
What do you guys think of the script being co-written by Brian Helgeland?
Oh, fuck, I meant to talk about that. yeah, no, that's delightful. So yeah, Brian Helgeland, for those who don't know, he did a bunch of stuff, but the first time I became aware of him was he directed A Knight's Tale, the one that uses, like, modern music for the medieval movie with Heath Ledger and so on. But, yeah, he's directed some other stuff. He directed the Mel Gibson Payback, right, if I remember correctly. And is a screenwriter for a number of things. But, yeah, this must have been a fairly early credit. I didn't check. But, yeah, that is delightful. I love when, like, people who wrote, you know, weird fucking 80s horror movies or when they go on to more legitimate mainstream success.
Yeah, that's good. What's your favorite of his?
Oh, of his? I'm a big Knight's Tale fan.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's a blast.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's got the David Bowie dance scene is fantastic, right? Like, it's so good. It's so good.
What's his name is Chaucer is amazing.
Oh, yeah. You know, like, he's in every Marvel movie now.
Vision.
Yeah,
Vision,
yeah, yeah.
Paul Bettany.
Yes.
Paul Bettany. Yeah.
So good. That's why we got him. Yeah.
That's what I'm here for.
But you're good at it. Thank
eventually
God.
Eventually remembering actors' names after saying the names of like six of their characters.
That's like 75% of the podcast. That guy. You're like, oh, yeah. What else are we missing from 976 Evil?
I don't know. Just looking at the career of Stephen Jeffries, the track that his career took, just in terms of the queer reading, you know, he eventually starred in a number of adult films after his heyday in the 80s and then transitioned back actually in the convention circuit. He's recently kind of come back and has embraced genre again, but I mean, if you look into his career, it took an interesting...
I don't think I have looked that far into it. Yeah,
no.
I kind of just
neither
know.
Have I.
No, but
sensibly looking into his IMDb.
Yeah, are you calling his 1-900 number though, Greg?
Right? Oh yeah, well, that's the 40s. Come on.
He just cries though, right? I mean, that's.
Yeah, that's good. No,
I basically only know him from this and Fright Night, pretty much.
Well, there's like Heaven Help Us.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that one.
Plays like the altar boy or the can't stop masturbating. There's Fraternity Vacation, where he plays another. He never played non awkward. You know?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think of him as like, you know, Crispin Glover or something, where he's always playing a weirdo. I mean, essentially, yeah.
Yeah, there is such a genuine sweetness to the first 20 or 30 minutes. Like, you can't help but like that guy. You're like, oh
yeah.
Man, like somebody. The sweet moment on the motorcycle, right? It's played for laughs, but it really is pretty freaking heartfelt, right? You're like, oh.
I mean, and he's amazing at it. Like, even in Fright Night, you know, where he plays Evil Ed, like, Evil Ed is this almost, like, over-the-top annoying, you know, character in some ways, to the main character especially, even though they're friends. But, like, when he has his big transformation, his death scene and everything, it's the movie's, like, most heart-wrenching, intense scene. Just because, like, you know, Stephen Jeffries sells it so well.
Yeah.
He's a great actor.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think he's pretty good in moments in this film. Yeah, pretty good. Anything else we're missing? All right, Oren, where can they find more of your stuff on the internet?
So I am Oren Gray on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Letterboxd and all those fucking places. And at OrenGray.com, I write... scary stories. I write stuff about movies. I write anything anybody will pay me to write. and that's pretty much all I do all day.
Very good. You can follow more of my stuff at Ty Unsel on Twitter, where I'm mostly tweeting about the horror of education and sometimes politics. But mostly I run the day-to-day at Signal Horizon, which is a website devoted to genre stuff, specifically about how we can use genre stuff in the classroom to think deeper about the world around us. So what are we talking about next time on the podcast?
So next time on the podcast, which will not be here, sadly. We hope to be here again, but we don't know when exactly yet. But next time on the podcast, we'll be talking about Anatomy from 2000, I believe.
That sounds right.
It's a German film. It's good stuff.
It's going to be a first watch for me. So check out more of the Horror Podcast episodes wherever you may get your podcasts. But we hope, as long as the folks here at Stray Cat will have us back sometime in April to bring you another live screening, live episode. Thanks so much for coming. Class dismissed. Thank you so much for coming out. It was wonderful. Yay.